I like eggnog. I make it for myself from time to time. It tastes pretty good, but I don't crave the homemade version. And normally I can't buy commercial eggnog in the store during the holidays because I'm lactose intolerant. But a year ago, I noticed Lactaid, that makes lactose-free products, was making eggnog during the winter holidays in a quart-sized container. Having to abstain from something over and over again can create some pent-up desire. So when I saw it in the cooler, I had to try it. It was good. Really good. I drank the whole carton and went back the next day for more. I tried to moderate my intake. I'd pour just half a glass. And then after about half an hour, I'd go back and get another half glass several more times. Then came January 1st, and they stopped making it. I was beside myself. I visited several grocery stores looking for it. It wasn't there. It was then that I knew how much I was really craving that eggnog. I'm going to go out on a limb and use the word all. You notice I usually say most times or few times, but I'm going to say all. All of us know, deeply know, the experience of craving. I noticed myself inspecting the shelf in the refrigerated section where I found the stuff the first time, every time I passed it in the Price Chopper. For the next 6 months, hoping some would appear. It didn't. As someone well versed in the theory of Buddhism, I recognize my inner experience in the Pali term tanha. The literal translation of that term is thirst. Thirst. Every time I saw that shelf was empty, I felt a tiny bit of sorrow, what the Buddha called dukkha. It was obvious to me that my thirst or craving for eggnog was causing me unhappiness and suffering. My yearning for Lactaid eggnog was rubbing my nose in the first and second noble truths of Buddhism. We are frequently dissatisfied with the way things are. That's number one. And the source of that dissatisfaction is wanting what isn't and rejecting what is. The Buddha taught the middle way. Path of moderation, releasing craving and aversion, and cultivating equanimity and acceptance. But today, I'd like to discover and discuss another way to look at this process that is science-based. This comes from going to the UU Humanists last week, and I got to talk science-based for this service. It is the science of homeostasis, coined by Bradford Cannon in 1926 and originally described by Claude Bernard about 75 years before that. They use the term to describe a regulatory process in living organisms. If our body temperature goes up or down too much, we'll get sick. If our eyes feel dry, we blink unconsciously to wet our corneas and protect us from blindness. if our blood sugar isn't carefully regulated, it can be life-threatening. Many, many processes in the body have intricate feedback loops that keep us healthy and happy. Those many interlocking processes are finely tuned to support our experience of being normal. You want to be awed. Watching that process is amazing. Those inner processes depend on our brain and sense and our senses to regulate what happens outside our bodies. When we're hungry, we need food. When we're thirsty, water. When we're tired, sleep. When we're cold, we need warmth. If we don't get enough food or water or sleep or warmth, we might die. And if we get too much food, too much water, rest, or warmth, that might imperil us too. We need just the right amount. And we need it when we need it to maintain our homeostasis. When I drank that first glass of half glass of eggnog, if I needed food or water, that need was likely small and easily satisfied by the first few sips. Something else, besides the forces of homeostasis, got me up for that second glass. Craving interferes with the process of homeostasis and unbalances the system. Thankfully, our bodies have all kinds of other mechanisms to stop the process of desire from over-regulating ourselves. One of those processes is the sense of being full. I might have had the sense of being full after the second half glass, but it didn't stop me from getting up for the third half glass. You see, I might have had a little self-judgment about not being able to stop after the first half glass, and that might have caused a drop in my endorphins and initiated a blah feeling. Or it might have been that sugar rush that I had gotten. It was starting to wear off as the spike of insulin began to wear off as I consumed that high fructose corn syrup and my blood sugar began to crash. This might have engaged a second regulatory process to increase endorphins and blood sugar to have another glass. Now magnify and intensify this process and replace it with alcohol, methamphetamines, cocaine, and heroin. These substances have far greater impacts on our bodies and create much greater disruptions to our homeostasis. As research has shown, those prone to becoming alcoholics metabolize alcohol in a special way that produces a strong pleasure response. This is not true for everyone. I know it doesn't happen for me. I intensely dislike the feeling of being inebriated, which doesn't take more than two or three drinks for me. I know others, after two or three drinks, who are starting to feel good and want more. The inner experience is quite different, but the biochemistry of the effects of alcohol on our homeostasis are the same. Not good. It's a poison. So the addiction process starts out harmlessly enough. Addicts use the substance to regulate their emotional homeostasis, often to feel normal. They habitually use the substance to regulate their mood, often when they're feeling down, to elevate it again. That may work long enough to condition a habitual habit deeply and powerfully. Then the emotional regulation begins breaking down. Tolerance. Tolerance develops, and more of the substance is needed to get the same effect. Meanwhile, the toxic effects of the substance begin to accumulate. The more the substance is used to make the addicts feel better, the way they remember it working, the worse things get. And then stopping using the substance makes things feel even worse. This leads to a complete breakdown of homeostasis, the very process the addict is trying to fix with the substance. And given the mental impairment that goes along with substance abuse, the brain can't correct the errors in understanding how to bring the system back into balance. The addict feels trapped. They don't know how to fix themselves by themselves. They need help, but often don't know it or resist the idea that another can help. I hope you heard in the readings from the big book and the reading from the small book that there is no one right way to deal with addiction. Each person's biology is unique. The ways addiction manifests in each person is different. Each substance has its own unique aspects too. Just because one person can quit cold turkey and never have another drink doesn't mean another person can do it too. Alcoholics Anonymous works for many, many people, but it doesn't work for everyone. Rational recovery using rational emotive therapy, now moving on to cognitive behavioral therapy, might work for some people too, but not for other people. Let us be grateful for the variety of ways as it helps more people abstain from substance abuse and live healthier, more satisfying, and productive lives. What interests me as a minister and a religious leader is the higher power concept. Alcoholics Anonymous created this concept as a way to point to God without using the term God. Higher power could be just a stand-in for that term, for God, or did AA stumble inadvertently on something else? And why does even a willingness to consider believing in a higher power get results? Why does believing in a higher power have anything to do with being able to stop drinking anyway? Lots of God-loving and believing priests are active alcoholics. Alcoholics Anonymous is based on the Christian conversion experience that has been universalized as a spiritual process. Though the Christian elements haunt some AA meetings, great effort has been put into keeping the higher power concept non-Christian. But without a doubt, the higher power concept does have a strong faith component. It is faith in a higher power that supposedly does the inner transformational work and liberates the addicts from craving. If you read the big book, it's pretty clear that faith is shaped like a Christian conception of God, even if those terms are not used. And what's good, though, is that AA lowers the faith barrier to the experience in that conception with this higher power language. What captures my attention and interest in the whole process that AA describes through the 12 steps is the reliance on experience. Believing gets results. If it didn't, then why do it? It's the argument that AA uses. They're arguing for an experience-based approach to spirituality. You try believing, and then you get results, which reinforces the process of believing. And believing in what? A power greater than yourself. I am a true believer in a lot of powers greater than myself. Every time I board a plane that defies gravity, flying up to 27,000 feet in a metal tube that has been pressurized with air, flying on wings, and I don't see anything holding them up, I heavily believe in powers greater than myself. There is no way that I have the power to get that plane off the ground by myself. I believe in using stoplights to regulate traffic, and I trust that other people will too. I believe in the medical system to offer me care to support my health. I believe I can buy safe and healthy food when I shop at the Honest Way Co-op, trusting many powers greater than me to regulate the food supply. I continually marvel at all the fresh food waiting for me when I walk in at any time to the market. For me, I find it very easy to believe there are forces much greater than myself into which I can tap for assistance. In seconds, I found who created the idea of homeostasis by consulting Wikipedia. Clearly, and without any doubt, a power of knowledge greater than me. I carry a phone in my pocket that gives me a power far greater than my simple mind. You see, the higher power concept is a very simple yet very effective way for us to begin to recognize the limits of our own ego, our own sense of self. When we are willing to see that we are not alone in the world, when we are willing to see that we are tightly bound into an interdependent web of existence of which we are a part, everything begins changing, and we get results. The Buddha talked about this as anatta, no self. Jesus pointed to it with the words realm of God. What is really real is we are a very small part of a much, much greater whole. The self-aware experience of being part of that whole can be an experience of love without an object, what the Greeks called agape. And agape can overwhelm craving. So I'm good with the higher power concept, but I'm also good with the no higher power concept. Sometimes people are so locked up in negative associations with the word God, or theological conceptions they disagree with, or have suffered for not believing in them, that they can't get to a place for them to see the concepts as metaphors metaphors for real living processes. They are effective ways to use reason rather than faith to alter how your brain works, that reestablishes the process of homeostasis again. Both are fine, depending on which one works better for you. And this wonderfully parallels Unitarian Universalism and what we're trying to do. We don't pick sides. If faith works for you, great. If reason works for you, great. I know. I love them both and affirm them both. I don't see them as contradictory, but as two different lenses to view reality. What matters in addiction is stopping the substance abuse. What matters in Unitarian Universalism is connecting to our core values, affirming them and taking the values we cherish and living them in the world. However we come to affirm those values, either by faith or by reason, will work and get results. All this matters because we live in a world addicted to material progress, and it is killing us and it is killing the planet. Many of the humans who are destroying the world are poisoned by craving and don't know it. Whether by faith or by reason, let's get better. And help both ourselves and the planet get back to homeostasis.